off to Never Never Land.
The songs we had were quite a bit more simple, a little more to the point.
I guess it was called Metallica, but I always call it the Black Album.
Something about this that's so black, it's like, how much more black could this be? And the answer is none.
There was no real theme to this one. It was simple black cover, and you had to listen to the music. You wouldn't be distracted by a drawing on the front.
I think you're rationalizing this whole thing like into something that you did on purpose. You know, I think we're stuck with a very stupid and a very dismal looking album. This is depressing.
Sad but true.
Hello, welcome to Rock and or Roll. I'm your reluctant host, BJ. And this episode, part two on Metallica, we're going to take a look at their 1991 self-titled album, commonly referred to as the Black Album. So there are kind of two parts to this episode. The first part, you're going to get to hear me and Fistful of Dave, who you'll remember join me on the previous episode about Metallica, about the early days of Metallica. You're going to get to hear me and Dave rip the Black Album apart. And then at the end of the episode, you're going to get to hear Joey Haney from the Rock Strikes 10 podcast give his rebuttal of sorts and tell us what he likes about the Black Album. So let's get into it. This is the episode called Metallica. Sad but true. You know, not necessarily in the mainstream, but everybody knew who Metallica was. And I think no matter what they did on their next album, they were going to break through. Even if they had made a more Metallica-sounding album, more of a thrash metal album, I think they still would have been huge. I don't think they had to sell out the way they did. And, you know, I think the Black Album literally is a sellout. You know, the definition of a sellout would be to change what you do in order to sell more records. I think that's exactly what they did.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I think the idea with the Black Album is they wanted to be the biggest band on the planet.
But what's sad is they didn't even have to do that. I think they could have made more Master of Puppets style record and still been the biggest band.
No, I would agree. But I think the idea of simplifying and then looking back at the first two records, and not necessarily copying those, but I think like Escape is a far better attempt at a commercial song than anything on the Black Album. It's better than anything on the record by far, and it is a better song than anything on that record. So I think they're capable of doing something a little less complex.
Yeah, and I really like Eye of the Beholder. That was like a poppier, more simple song, but it had a good melody.
Yeah. Well, that's when, I mean, we're picking like I think one of the problems with Justice for whatever most people is the song. Like, dude, Justice for All is almost 10 minutes. Live as a Zombie is 10 minutes. Freight Ends of Sanity is 8 minutes.
Right.
You know, everything is like longer and longer. So I think that, you know, partly it's a reaction to that. Partly it's a thing. We want to be the biggest band in the universe. And it worked for them. But I listened to it and I'm surprised it worked for him because I don't think there is anything about the Black Album that has anything to do with Metallica before it, besides it's some of the same guys.
Right.
And you know, obviously you can hear that it would be the same guys making that music, but musically it comes from a place that has nothing to do with what that band was. And I think that was the thing people were so upset with, and I was upset with. I mean, they debuted that Enter Sandman. I remember driving home from work to watch it at lunch because it was debuting at noon on MTV, and just hearing that the riff, and I'm like, wow, I hope it gets better than this, was my first thought, and it didn't. And I was like, it was the worst I ever felt about hearing music at that time. You know, the whole thought, this is my band, what the hell are they doing? This is not good. It's boring. And this riff is dull. As the quote, Lars Ulrich, this is a stock riff.
Yeah, it's stock. I think
that's the problem with the whole record.
Stock.
See, he says that, and I think that whole record is a stock riff. There's nothing.
True.
There's nothing about that record that is stands out, that it's like, wow, that's amazing.
Well,
there's parts that you're like, this could be amazing, and then they shit the bed by going into some mid-tempo garbage.
Well, what I find interesting is if you watch that a year and a half in the life of Metallica or whatever, which is supposedly like a documentary of the making of this record, but you really only see them doing like the three singles or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
They don't show you them recording, you know, Holier Than Thou or The God That Failed or My Friend of Misery, any of those that I remember.
Right.
And if you watch Some Kind of Monster, it's so depressing the way they made Saint Anger, where they just made shit up on guitar, wrote some fucking lyrics, and then James tried to sing them over whatever they had recorded. That's not how you write a song.
I don't know. Put this one with it like there was no thought, but...
Yeah, well, you literally see James grab the lyrics, walk up to the mic, and then just try to sing it over the music.
Yeah, it's...
And I have to wonder how much of the Black Album was made in a similar manner, like just put together in the studio, because a lot of these songs...
They don't go anywhere.
Yeah, they don't... Sometimes they resemble James just singing the fucking words over the music without any thought. There's hardly, a lot of these songs have barely any melody.
Yeah. I went back and listened to it, and I've gone from bummed out. I own the record. I ended up buying it again for whatever used somewhere, something cheap. And for a while I've been enjoying, but then when I listened to it with a critical ear, I'm like, this isn't real good.
No.
Like, I don't know how I could ever listen to this again. Like, this is terrible, because it just, none of the songs go anywhere. Like, they used to kind of take you on a journey. There was ups and downs and you know, a crescendo, and, you know, you'd feel like you're going somewhere. These songs just kind of start and end. And they're pop song. I mean, there's the pop song structure. It's like verse, chorus, middle, you know, chorus out. There's you know, there's nothing spectacular about them.
Yeah, but a lot of the time the verse is just James grunting the words over a riff, and then the chorus is James chanting the chorus over
the
a
title,
riff.
Right.
And no, that's not a song.
No,
I mean,
no. Everything about his vocal melodies are gone.
Yeah.
Everything about his guitar playing, they took his precision and speed and picking and like being able to take one note and make it into a riff just by the way he's picking it, gone. It's just chug, ka-chug, ka-chug. Everything's mid-paced. There's no real imagination except for maybe Unforgiven, but I think they could have done a lot more to make it weirder. But otherwise, everything is like this mid-paced, boring, plotting garbage.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking, you know, Rust in Peace came out less than a year before the Black Album. And, you know, Dave Mustaine wanted to beat Metallica. Well, he kicked their fucking ass, in my opinion. I mean, Rust in Peace, so much better than the Black Album. It's a fucking joke. And
well, I would agree with that. The problem is what Megadeth did after that.
Well, even Symphony, even what's it called? That record.
I don't know. Symphony
Countdown to Extinction. Yeah, even that is better than the Black Album, though. As bad
agree,
as it is.
But I can't stand that, right? I mean, that Hello Me, It's Me Again thing.
Like, yeah, no, it's terrible. There's a lot of terrible stuff on there, but there are a couple songs on there that are way better than anything on the Black Album, in my
probably,
opinion.
Probably, yeah.
Well, Skin of My Teeth, definitely.
Yeah,
and,
okay.
I
don't know.
Yeah,
that's
not a good album, but I would say it's better than the Black Album, but I guess that's
no,
not
probably.
Saying.
I just think it's... But I think that record's a reaction to the Black
yeah,
Album.
Yeah, yeah. But for me, Holy Wars is about as good as thrash metal ever got. I just love that.
Well, I think, you know, my thought on Rust in Peace is it's an accessible a slightly more accessible version of the first two records. And not that I don't like So Far So Good, So What, I like that record, but it's obviously was made under some
crazy circumstances. It's not very good.
I like some of the stuff on there. I mean, some of the lyrics are goofy. The PMRC one, I love the song, but it's like Hook and Mouth, is that the one? But I like some of that stuff on there, but it's obviously, you know, it's flawed due to substance or whatever the heck was going on. But it's like they took the first two records, you took a little bit of the wacky jazz aspect out of it, and just made it's definitely Megadeth's most cohesive record. I mean, I probably would say I enjoy the first two more, just because I don't know if it's sentimental, nostalgic reasons, whatever. But definitely, that was it. I think that's as good of a record, the best things front to back that Mustaine could write. He is actually coherent. I think, is there 10 songs on there? The problem with Megadeth before that, it was like 7 songs and a cover. It's like he never could come up with enough material. But he, you know, I think he finally had a clear head. Marty Friedman helped on that record, and I think they did the best they could. I think the problem is for Mustaine is it didn't do as good as Metallica. So it was a failure. If it doesn't sell more than Metallica to him, I think he thinks he's a failure, which I think is terrible, because I think the first 4 Megadeth records are great. But
well, I mean, if you just take Holy War as the Punishment due and put that up against anything on the Black Album, it's joke.
I'll take any song off of that record over anything on the Black Album.
Definitely. The first thing I would say about this record is name the fucking album. How hard is that? And they had great albums, you know, Ride the Lightning, Master of Puppets,
right,
and Justice for All. Great album titles, and they're all songs. So how about Through the Never? I mean, it works. It's not as good as those, but...
No, Through the Never is definitely a better title than you get. For number one, you're Metallica. It's 1992. You know what Spinal Tap is.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I guess, and somebody had to bring it up, like, dude, looks like, I think the problem by then is they're, and this happens to a lot of bands, is they're surrounded by yes men.
Yeah.
And nobody said, dude, that looks like the Spinal Tap record. Maybe might want to think of something else there.
Well, there's a quote that where James said, you know, we didn't want people to be distracted by some drawing on the cover. We wanted them to listen to the music. Bullshit. That is, I mean, what the fuck? That's dumb. I mean, what does that mean? That's complete bullshit.
Yeah.
I think Holier Than Thou would have been a really good album title, and it would have kind of been good coming after And Justice for All. It kind of would have had a similar feel, I think. I think maybe they just had an issue where they were like, none of these songs are good enough to be title tracks, which they're right. None of them are. But
oh, don't project yourself, BJ. I think they thought they were all great is the problem. The production, I think Bob Rock was a bad choice. I think really, and I had thought this since after Slayer's Rain and Blood came out, I thought back then they should have got Ruben to produce them. And that probably would have been a better position than when they did it to do it with Death Magnetic.
Well, Bob Rock was a terrible choice. Huge, huge mistake artistically, obviously not monetarily.
No,
but did Bob? How much did Bob Rock have to do with the success of this album anyways?
No, probably not much, I don't think. I mean, they went in and they knew what they were doing.
If you look at what Bob Rock did after Dr. Feelgood, in between Dr. Feelgood and Metallica, he did Little Caesar, The Electric Boys, and A Little Ain't Enough for David Lee Roth. Now, would anyone listen to those records and say, this guy should produce Metallica? No.
No, but the whole the whole idea is the Cult and Dr. Feelgood, though. Yeah. I mean, that's where that came from.
Well, the Cult had a huge record because Fire Woman was a fucking great song, and it was a huge hit. The End. I mean, it had nothing to do with Bob Rock.
No, and they had set the stage with Electric.
Yeah.
Set the stage with Electric, came out with a more palatable version, you know, a more streamlined version. Fire Woman, huge. There you go. That's it.
All that happened with Sonic Temple is they had a huge single, and that's it.
And I think that with Dr. Feelgood, Motley Crue wrote.
Ugh.
But no, they wrote a better record than the last two, as far as I'm concerned. I think the two before it are worse.
No, I like Girls, Girls, Girls. Theater of Pain is a load of shit, but
Theater of Pain is awful. And the best thing about it is that they've said that Motley Crue is only good for those first two records, as far as I'm concerned.
I don't understand this. I think the song Dr. Feelgood is terrible. I can't comprehend how that song came out and was a big hit. It's
But you get Kickstart My Heart though. Well, that was
I like that all right. Dr. Feelgood, one of the most confusing huge records ever for me. I think it's
huge. People loved Motley Crue. People loved the personality.
Yeah.
There's no reason Bob Rock should have been producing a Metallica record.
No. So the album's called Metallica.
Yes.
I guess.
It is. That's the title. Yeah.
And so we agree they should have called it Through the Never, probably, right?
Sure. Anything but
yeah.
Self-titled.
And then they ended up using that as their movie title, you know, recently. So we were going to go song by song here and talk about the Black Album. I think as I described it, Take It Apart. So the first song, Enter Sandman, my thoughts on this song is if the people at Sesame Street had gone to the people that write their songs and said, hey, can you write us a song? We've got a little segment about a kid who's afraid to in his room at night. Can you write us a song in the style of Metallica for Sesame Street? This would have worked. It's Sesame Street Metallica. That's what I think of it. And I mean, the lyrics are just dumb. Really, really dumb. And the riff, I guess, is catchy, but it's not enough to carry an entire song. It just doesn't do anything for me, that song. I think it's boring, and I think the lyrics are just stupid.
And I would agree, and it's funny because I wrote pretty much the same thing for every song on this record, and I thought I was going to have a lot more to say, yeah. And I don't have anything clever like a Sesame Street thing, but my problem, like, I don't think the riff is catchy at all. I mean, like I said, when I heard that riff, I'm like, this is the band that made some of the greatest riffs of all freaking time. I'm like, we're talking up there with as good as anything Tony Iommi, as far as I'm concerned, with who's a riff master. Like, and this is what they come up with. Like, and I was just like bummed, and I bummed that it never went anywhere. I was just like, you know, Sleep With One Eye Open, and then obviously the one thing that struck me the first time I heard the song was, Jesus Christ, James has been listening to Danzig far too much. And it's funny going back because the vocals. And I mean, I don't like them, but they're far better on the Black Album than when you get to Load, Reload, and Saint Anger, because those are like he just took it and got worse. But they let him do his southern thing on those. But anyways,
yeah, that really is the. I mean, the songs aren't there on this record, but the worst thing on the record for me is I found this word paragoge. Which is the addition of a sound to the end of a word. And on this record, it's similar to the Michael Jackson thing. You know, if you listen to the Weird Al song Fat, he just does it a billion times, making fun of that Michael Jackson grunt. Yeah. And I think James Hetfield has a similar kind of tick going on. I don't know where it came from. If you go back and listen, he doesn't do it. He doesn't do it on any of the early stuff. You know, he doesn't. On Master of Puppets, there's no other songs I could find. It might be there on Eye of the Beholder at the end of some of the lines in the verses a little bit, but I mean, he didn't do it on any of their other. There's never a moment in any of their early songs where he did that at the end of a word.
You know, I think another thing with that is, and I think if you want to fault Bob Rock for anything, I think this is it.
Yeah. Because
the whole idea of that they had to teach or James wanted to learn how to sing is a load of crap. The singing is perfectly fine and everything that came before this. James isn't freaking Jeff Tate. He's not, you know, he's not even Glenn Danzig. You know, he's not a crooner, and he tried to be a crooner. And I don't know if this is the, you know, the time you started listening to Nick Cave, too, or whatever came in, but there's some of that that happens later on. But,
You know, I went back and listened.
His vocal melodies are terrible on this.
Yeah, they really are.
Used to be great. And I think, and I don't know if his lyrics were ever real great, but it definitely makes stand out that they're awful on this record because nothing else is good. So you have to listen to them. And the vocals are so up front in the mix, they're just terrible.
I went back and listened for it. You know, he doesn't go, "For whom the bell tolls." Ah! He does not do it. He does not say, "Can I kill the battery?" Sanitarium. He doesn't
But I think that's what the singing part is. I think that's part of what showing him how to sing was. And at least that's what I get out of it, because that's the difference between them talking about him being singing and not singing. And if it's the Black Gum, that's what was added, like adding
the paragoge. Yeah, I really think probably Bob Rock's influence is to blame. I don't know. Yeah, he's putting more effort into the singing, and then that's kind of a release or something. He's when he sings that line and he puts a lot of effort into it, and then at the end he tags it with that thing, but it's so fucking annoying. Well, and he does it so much.
Say your prayers, little one. Don't forget my son, to include everyone. I tuck you in, along within. Keep you free from sin, till the Sandman he comes.
So what do we got next? Sad But True?
Yeah, Sad But True. I like the song. I think it has a great groove, but like I was saying, James ruins it with the fucking paragoge, the paragogic singing, if that's how you would describe it.
Sad But True is the one where he says hey in it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't stand it. Hey! Like, dude, that's what you came up for that's your vocal melody, huh?
Yeah.
The intro is great. You know, it's got, it's got a stock metal riff, and then the haze, yeah, there it is. The chorus is all right. I kind of like the chorus. But again, it's another song that does absolutely nothing. It goes nowhere. Just kind of ends. It starts and it kind of ends.
It's one of the better moments on the album, but, you know, like we're saying, that's not saying a whole lot. Like I said, I like it, but I think it's pretty much ruined by the way James sings it, so
for sure.
I can't really listen to it.
Yeah.
So
I think I remember liking this one, and then the haze started. I'm like, oh, I remember why I don't like this one.
Yeah, I mean, he says, "I'm your dream, mind astray." Yeah, he literally does it on every fucking the last word of every line. It's crazy.
I think the other thing that's super annoying, and I never was a huge fan of Kirk Hammett's solos. Like, somebody take that wah away from him, please. But it was never been more apparent than on this record. Like, dude, every song, like, oh my god, stop with the wah pedal. It's so annoying. I think that's as annoying as James's yeah.
And back to naming the album, this would have been the perfect album title for the record, because it really is Sad But True.
Yeah,
the whole existence of the album.
Yeah.
So the third song, Holier Than Thou, to me, no hook, just grunting the words over a riff, just really weak. There's just nothing there for me at all with this song.
This is another one. The intro made me think we were going to have a fast song that was going to be good, and then...
And this is a song where there's way too much emphasis on the words over the melody. James, like, had something to say, but I always think that the best way to write a song is to fit the words to the melody. And when you have too many words, or you have certain, it just doesn't serve a song most of the time. And I think this song suffers from that. And the vocals are really high in the mix, probably because he really wanted to get his point across with these lyrics, I think. But also a pretty generic sentiment. I mean, he wasn't saying anything very profound here, so.
No, I mean, and that's the thing. I think some of this stuff is, the problem is all of the edge, all of the attack, all of the anger that used to be there, the aggression, you know, they're singing kind of about the same stuff, but in this plotting, non-attacking, non-aggressive, you know, everybody calls this a hard rock record, and I won't go that. I think it's a heavy metal record. It's just a boring heavy metal record.
Yeah.
Holier than thou, you are. Holier than thou,
So now we come to The Unforgiven, which I like this song. This is the one thing on the album that's original and that feels inspired. This song feels inspired. They were trying to do something. And I think it's really well done. And it's one of the only songs on the record that seems fully written. Like, it feels finished. Yes. They had a vision, and accomplished it.
I think this, and then Nothing Else Matters. I would agree. Those are probably the only songs that sound finished. The other thing with, where we were talking about the singing, this is the only place where he's not doing the grunts.
Right.
And he's actually singing, and it's like, it's not annoying. I'm not overly fond of just him. He doesn't have the greatest just regular voice. It fits. And I do like the song. I think it's interesting. I think they could have made it a little more weirder, like putting a little more kind of the dissonance that they have in, you know, some of the things they do. But I think it's a good idea, and it was a good place to go. I thought, you know, they could do progressive this way and be more interesting. And this is probably the song I can listen to the most on the record.
Yeah, and making the chorus be the mellow part.
Right.
And pulling it off. They pulled it off. It works. And obviously this song was going to turn off the old school Metallica fans that were going to be insistent on it being heavy at all times.
I think all of the heavier stuff on this record is the same song, pretty much. Like, the same thing, the same tempo. Slight variation, but there's no dynamics to it. This song has a bit of dynamics and gives the record a little dynamics. The problem is everything around it is not good, so... I think if you had a record where the songs around it were better, it might be maybe more palatable. Probably not, but I think it's definitely the best attempt at doing something different for them.
Yeah, and I guess we even have to begrudgingly give some kudos to Bob Rock on this song as well. There's some cool production on the song. I would say this is the one thing on the album where they actually did something good.
Well, there's probably two parts of... this record that you're talking about production, like Nothing Else Matters, because it has to have production because it has the orchestra thing on it, the strings section, and this. But other than that, there's not any real production on this record.
Right. Yeah, like the next song, Wherever I May Roam, which I really don't like this song. Of course, James is over the top with the paragoge thing, and I think the chorus sucks. This song, for some reason, this song just annoys me. It's just a dud, and really doesn't hold up after you hear it, you know, multiple times for me. I just don't like it. I don't know.
This is another one where I like the intro. I mean, the intro sounds like something that they would put before, if it was an earlier record, before a fast song.
Mm-hmm.
And then again, it delves right back into, this one's a lot more plodding and slower. I guess there's a little bit of dynamics on this song, but... Again, as you were saying, the vocal, the chorus is just him saying the words.
Yeah,
there's not really any thought to it. It's just, I'm going to say wherever I may roam.
I'm going to chant
on top of this.
The words.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's, that's what's lacking more than anything on this record is melody.
I think the lack of melody and the lack of imagination besides Unforgiven.
Right.
There's not a lot of imagination on this record. It's like, hey, let's make it simple.
Yeah.
I mean, that was the whole concept. We're going to make it simple, but not make it interesting.
And, I mean, we didn't need another song about a band being on tour.
No.
So I guess, is that the end of side one?
I don't know. I never listened to it on album.
Yeah. It must be. So is Don't Tread on Me the first song on side two? Holy shit.
I don't know. There's 12 songs.
Yeah, maybe it's the last song on side one.
I don't know. I've never seen it on vinyl, so.
Don't Tread on Me. Terrible song. So dumb. I hate everything about the song.
I'll tell you, this one starts off. So, on the last record, they did the OEO thing. OEO.
Yeah.
Kind of a cute little thing.
Yeah, Frayed Ends of Sanity, yeah.
Right. They do that cute little intro, and I was going to look up what the heck this was from, and I forgot. But
Oh, right.
It's so bad.
Yeah.
And then it goes, it's goofy, and I never, like, the OEO thing, I'm like, all right, it's fine. But I never thought it was too awesome. But it's even worse when it's on a horrible song like this one, and it's just, the riff's boring. I don't know.
The lyrics are nightmarishly bad.
Love it or leave it.
Yeah. I hate this song. It's just...
You know, and I'm not, I don't really care if he's right wing, by the way, or if they want to lean that way, but the turnaround from the last record politically to this record?
Yeah, yeah.
Are you the same person? Like,
yeah.
Hey, Master of Pop, like, yeah, even all of the records before this, like, I really don't want to hear your jingoistic garbage.
Yeah, I mean, they talk about how long they spent recording this album. They should have spent a good portion of that time writing the fucking songs and less time recording them. That's all I would have to say. They did not spend enough time writing this record, and they spent way too much time recording it and worrying about, you know, what the fucking drums sounded like or whatever.
You know what? I think they spent enough time writing this record, and I think they thought I'd have the opposite. I think they thought too much about it.
Really?
It's like, I think it was too overanalyzed, too much, hey, we're, you know, I think it was too much thought of, like, let's not be progressive, let's not be super crazy, let's make this, you know, straight ahead. This is around the time. This is the other thing. There's a huge thing in the Bay Area with bands, and Exodus was another one of them that had this whole want to be AC/DC with Bay Area thrash bands. And I remember that they all were talking about AC/DC and how AC/DC could be intense without being heavy. You know what you get what I'm saying on that?
Yeah.
And this is kind of that. I don't necessarily think that, hey, they're writing songs like AC/DC, but I think the thought of, hey, we need to make, you know, we need to write these, you know, simply like AC/DC writes songs.
Yeah, but they were capable of writing melodies far better than what is on this record.
Well, but I think also part of it is it's the same tempo.
Yeah.
Through a lot of the record, you know, Unforgiven is different, and Nothing Else Matters actually has a vocal melody on it. But those aren't the plodding middle pace heavy songs. But this, I mean, am I right that this record is, there's like a slow speed and a middle speed.
Yeah.
With all the heavy songs, and that's, you know, cutting out Unforgiven and Nothing Else Matters, but they're all like about the same speed. It's one of two speeds and there's no dynamics between anything.
Yeah, I mean, it really seems like almost everything that was great about Metallica is just gone.
That's my thought on this record.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of bands that do this. Everything that was good, everything that they did was good, they got rid of.
Yeah.
And replaced it with I don't know what, like what they thought they should be. I think bands at certain points, and I tell you, I'm not necessarily that this was a, I mean, I think it's a bad decision, but I don't think it's necessarily like the wrong or the decision, the band, wrong decision for the band. Like, hey, we need to change. We need to do something different. I think the problem is when the band loses their way of what they actually do well, and they have at this point, they don't know what they do well because they got rid of everything that they do well and replaced it with things that they obviously don't do very well.
Yeah, I mean, the next song, Through the Never, to me is just like an impersonation of a Metallica song.
Yeah, this is one where I'm like, I kind of like this one, but that's exactly, this is like, yeah, it's kind of a Metallica song, but not really. You know, like the build into the chorus, but the chorus is non-existent.
Yeah, it feels not only uninspired, but it doesn't even seem finished. Like, what I was thinking is, yes, you can simplify your sound, but you still have to finish writing and arranging the songs. Simplified doesn't mean incomplete or unfinished.
Right.
You know, you still have to arrange a simple song. So to me, like on this song, they stopped before they were finished.
I think, well, I mean, for me, that's pretty much the whole record. None of these,
yeah.
I mean, that's one of my general notes about this is like none of these songs, except for two, Nothing Else Matters, and I'm going to say it again, Unforgiven, they don't go anywhere. They just kind of start and they stop.
Yeah.
And some of them have choruses and some of them don't, but the lack of hooks. And, you know, you may sound funny talking about Metallica, but think of the chorus for Trapped Under Ice. Total hook. That's
right.
That's catchy as shit. There's nothing on this record, and this record's huge, there's nothing even remotely close to the quality of that melody. It's that there's nothing anywhere near that good.
No. Yeah, so now we've come to a song you've already mentioned a few times, Nothing Else Matters, which I don't care if it's a ballad. I just don't like the song. It has nothing to do with it being a ballad. I don't have anything against ballads. I just don't... I really respect what James did musically. Obviously, he put a lot. Now, this is a song that was written and finished, and he put a lot of thought into it, and a lot of care went into it. I just don't really like the chorus. I just don't really like it that much as a song. But yeah, this, you know, it's funny that the two songs that stand out in this record is actually, there's some effort and some inspiration there, are the two that are like the ballads. But
yeah,
how sad, you know, that, I guess that sums up this record. The heavy songs, they put no thought or effort into, and the ballads are the only moments of inspiration on the, and it's a Metallica record, so.
Right, and I think it's just like, I think this is the best guitar solo on the record, and I like the way it goes into that guitar solo, where kind of that build, and then it's actually a fairly decent, you know, it's a thought out guitar solo. If there wasn't Juan, I'd almost think that James did the guitar solo, because it's not overly played as Kirk likes to do. But there's Wah all over it. But yeah, overall, this, it's, I don't know. The last thing I want Metallica to be is sappy.
Yeah.
And it's sappy, but it's definitely, you know, the only other well put together song on the record.
Yeah, and I remember reading about this before it came out, reading about this ballad that was going to be on the Metallica album, and I was excited to hear it. I wasn't like, oh, no, they're doing a ballad.
No, I was too, because it had the whole thing where, you know, we're finally doing a ballad where there's not a big train wreck at the end, which I believe is the exact quote that one of James or Lars said, that doesn't have a big train wreck ending.
And I just don't think it's a good chorus, and again, you have James going... No, no, you know, there's just, he has to kind of ruin it by the way he sings it. But I don't think it's a good hook anyways on or melody on the chorus.
No, but I think it's better than anything else on the record, or close, except for maybe Unforgiven. It's at least, you know, this at least seems like, as we talked about, that they thought about it, that there was some effort put into what they were doing. Right. It may not be good, but at least, you know, there was effort.
Yeah, unlike most of the songs on the record, you could say this is well done, at least.
Yes, yeah.
And if they wanted to accomplish something, not even to say they accomplished something, they were even trying to, you can see they were trying to accomplish something, which is, for this record is,
yeah, well,
even
I,
that.
I think that's the perfect point, is like that there was a thought here. Never cared for what they do. But at least there seemed to be like, hey, this is what we're trying to do with this. Like, you could have an idea, whereas everything else is just seems like, I don't know, we should stop it now because it's 4 minutes long or 5 minutes long, and these need to be simple and short.
Yeah, I mean, now we come to the next song of Wolf and Man, which is so fucking dumb, so terrible, just embarrassing. This song is truly embarrassing and
Shapeshift?
Pathetic. Yeah, and... there's tons of paragoge going on. I don't know if that's how you pronounce it, paragoge. The addition of a sound to the end of a word. I just like saying that over. Because
I think the worst thing about this song for me, though, is it could have been a good song. Like, there's almost an intensity in this one, but the vocals and the vocal melody are so awful.
Yeah.
It just ruins it.
I don't know how else to describe it besides just dumb.
And there's that middle part where he's talking. That's terrible. But then the build out of it is so bad. It like doesn't like builds and then gets less intense.
As much as I hate Don't Tread on Me, I think of Wolf and Man as the low point of the record, probably. Yeah, well, the God That Failed, I wrote down the band that failed because I think it had potential. I like the central riff, like the
do-na-na. Yeah, that's all right.
I think The God That Failed shows more potential than most of the other songs. It just, like I keep saying, it's not finished. There's not enough effort put into it. Right. It's not arranged. It's just not finished. But I think there were moments of potential in that I hear in The God That Failed more than like Holier Than Thou or Wolf and Man.
And I think the pre-chorus is all right too. But again, it's a build into nothing. You know, they build and then they go mellow.
It's not good. In the end, it's not a good song.
Right.
But maybe it could have been. If more time had been spent,
you have more faith in this one than I do. But yeah,
if they had a better producer than Bob Rock, or if they had put more time into it, writing and arranging the song, I guess I could almost say the same thing about My Friend of Misery, because the verse is all right. It's just the chorus is horrendous.
This one I have is nondescript. I mean, these two songs I got to them, and I'm like, I remember these, but I'm just kind of like, they don't do anything.
No, they
don't. More so than the rest of the songs, I don't think do anything. And like, the Wolf and Man is obnoxious, but at least it stands out for being obnoxious. I don't think these songs stand out. I think that's the biggest, is that they're just not there.
Yeah, it's true. But I think both of them, I would say probably more than a lot of the other songs, these two had a couple of moments I heard that I thought that could have been something.
Everything's anticlimactic. There's a buildup that leads to nothing.
Yeah, these two songs, they suffer from what most of the record suffers from, which is they're not completely finished as far as writing and arranging goes. James's vocals are really annoying, and what else was I going to say?
I don't know. It's like this. I have the same thing written for practically every song with like a slight differentiation.
Those are the main problems for me. Is the material doesn't seem fully realized, and James is really annoying. And those are the two things that kill the record more than anything.
I think the big problem is like James before this record is like one of my favorite vocalists.
Right.
Of anything. And then he turned into one of my least favorite vocalists of anything. And
yeah,
I think that's a big problem. The vocals are overall the big killer.
And to think about how much time they spent in the studio ruining his vocals.
Yeah. Well, but I think it's right. I think they spent way more time on the sounds.
Yeah. Than writing the song.
And the music, right? I think it was just like, oh, let's get this drum and let's get this and let's get that done. And
yeah, it's like the last song, "The Struggle Within," is really bad.
This is
probably the worst example in the album of. The verse is James grunting words over a riff, and then the chorus is James yelling the chorus over a riff, and there's no melody.
Reaching out for something you got to feel, or clutching to what you thought was real. Kicking at a dead horse pleases you, no way of showing your gratitude.
The thing, what I have written for this one is, this is a bad way to end a record. And the intro is kind of sounds like Justice, something off of Justice a bit. But again, this suffers from exactly the same thing I've said about every song that is on this record. Nondescript, bad vocals, bad riffs. It's just not good.
Well, as I always say, for me, melody is the most important thing. And The Struggle Within has almost no melody. So if you look at what Metallica did in, whatever, 8 years... between Kill 'Em All and the Black Album, and then you look at what they've done in 20 plus years since the Black Album. I mean, they've hardly done anything. You know, as bland and boring as the Black Album is, Load and Reload are so a billion times worse in every way.
And they could do, I think they thought they could do anything they wanted after the Black Album, because they thought it was the right step.
Yeah. And, well, James really took everything that was bad about the way he sang on the Black Album, he took it and multiplied it astronomically on those records, so that if a song was good, I could never even listen to it.
It's just the Southern rock thing is Ronnie and God, it's so bad.
Well, yeah, and I always really, really loved Metallica's covers, and then they come out with that, and just the new covers were so fucking horrible.
And even the songs of band, even the Discharge song, which should be full on raging, it's bad.
Well, and Whiskey in the Jar was a fucking nightmare. And of course, the Bob Seger song is one of the worst things ever. Yeah.
Except for Loverman, which is worse.
So what in the end, what do we blame the Black Album on? Was it literally just selling out, trying to make something more palatable to radio and to the mainstream? Was it Bob Rock?
I don't think it was Bob Rock at all.
Yeah.
I think it was an overreaction to Justice, combined with the selling out aspect of them wanting to be the biggest band in the universe. And they achieved it, I think, detrimentally to their future. But
well, that's the thing, is once they've made more money than they could ever have dreamed of, then suddenly they're a lot less motivated.
Yeah.
you know,
it's the whole kill your idols thing. Like, don't be surprised when, you know, artists you like do something horrible. But then I think, you know what, I got 4 albums and a few EPs of just some of my favorite music ever. So, that's more than a lot of bands will give you. I mean, how many bands do 4 records that you personally think are great, you know? So, there you go. All my hostility about my favorite band of all time turning to crap.
Yeah, see, they're not even one of my favorite bands at all. But, I mean, I love Master of Puppets and stuff. You know, there are not many bands in history that did what Metallica did, which was just, like, create a whole new genre of rock and roll.
This is Metallica performing If You're Happy and You Know It. If you're happy and you know it, clap your hands. Show me. Are you happy? Show me. Clap your hands.
I don't sound like that, do I?
All right, so joining me now is Joey Haney from the Rock Strikes 10 podcast. Hey, Joey.
Hello, hello. How you doing, BJ?
I'm good. How are you? Was that a Gary Delabate? Hello, hello.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I like to do that too.
Dude, I'm a massive Stern nerd. So,
so am I. So I put out, I recorded the first half of this episode with Fistful of Dave. Yeah, I was listening back to it and I was realizing how one-sided it was. And I thought it would be great to get a different perspective on it. So I put on the Facebook page asking if there's anyone out there who would like to, who really likes the Black Album or is a big fan of it or would want to defend it. I don't remember what exactly I wrote, because as soon as you responded to it, I deleted it because you were the perfect person to respond. As soon as I saw that you responded, I thought, yep, that's what I wanted. So, you just said that you would do it. And that was great. So, now here we are. And I edited together the first half of the episode and I sent it to you and you listened to it. And we were just, before we started talking here, we were talking about how I noticed that I swore a lot when I was talking to Dave, which I normally don't do so much. I mean, that's how I talk in real life, but I don't, you know, usually do that on the podcast. And then I think you were going to tell a story relating to that. Is that right?
Oh, I said, well, that's okay, because James Hetfield said fuck a lot on the Black Album tour, like more than he ever did. Not only would he do it, especially if you have the live ship box set, you know this, or if you saw him once on the tour. I saw him twice on this tour technically, but
now
he says fuck a lot between in the song banner, but he will add the word fuck to songs that didn't even have it originally, like Master of Puppets, which annoyed me to no end, actually, and I was the target market at that point. So yeah, let's get at it.
People have heard the first part, and me and Dave pretty much agreed on everything, and we're very, very extremely negative for the most part. Do you have an initial reaction to that, or?
Well, that was my initial reaction. Not that I think either of you guys are wrong, and I'll tell you how it is. I'm not going to give into peer pressure here, because that's not why I'm on the show. That's not why you're having me on here.
Right.
I mean, I'll give you a little bit of my background, like a 30-second, just to qualify, you know, for anybody who may not know me. I'm sure everybody does not know me. But, you know, my personal history with Metallica does go back pre-Black Album. And if you started there, that's fine. But I was fortunate enough. I lived in a town that you wouldn't know if you didn't live in Texas, a place called Abilene, Texas. And we had an AM station that played metal. And I'm talking like metal. They play classic hard rock and proto metal too, but the first time I heard Metallica was on this station in 1987. I heard Damaged Incorporated, and I've never been the same since. Same year I heard Die by the Sword by Slayer, and I heard my first Anthrax songs and Testament songs there. So, you know, I was right there in about the 86 era when I came in. I'm not going to tell you that I bought Kill 'Em All when they came out. I bought it later.
Right.
But so I knew about them before they were on MTV. And I remember even, I was a weird kid. I read Billboard magazine when I was 8 years old and shit like that. But I remember they took out a one-page ad saying, "We went gold on Master of Puppets with no radio and no MTV." So, and I always thought that was so cool. And I was a fan of that album. Master of Puppets was where I came in. So
yeah, that was a really big deal. But I also think I know they did have some radio play, at least in Milwaukee.
Well, yeah, like I said, I'm sure people like Eddie Trunk were playing them, and you know, those stations that cared, that had that kind of, you know, basically permission to do it, whether it was AM or what have you. I mean, AM was pretty much dead by the 80s anyway, but this was like a metal station that very few people knew about, but it was just one of those things, you know, just so they keep their license, they have an AM station. So they put a guy in the basement and they played metal all day. And so that's how I heard about it. So I heard it because of radio, but, you know, a lot of kids like two towns over from me would have never heard it otherwise. They didn't hear Metallica until one came out, and that's just the way it is. But when the Black Album came out, I don't know how old you are, BJ. I feel like we're around the same age, but I'm 36.
Yeah, I'm 5 years older than you. So.
Okay, yeah. I was in junior high school, so that means you were probably in high school when the Black Album came out.
Yep. Yeah.
So, like, junior high, that's a whole other kind of appeal, I think. Metal is similar from junior high to high school in a lot of ways, but, you know, this was like real, like, this is going to kind of mold the way you listen to music for the rest of your life, pretty much, especially in junior high, I think. And high school to another degree, but like, so this came out, I'm in junior high school, and this is like the record. And I'm sure when you were in high school, this was the record. And I heard some points you guys made, you know, the first half of the show. And there were some things thrown out there, I'm sure just in a passionate rage, things like, like it wasn't a good idea, and it damaged their career and stuff like that. But when you talk about the Black Album and put it you know, in this little hole here, and don't look at what came before, what came after. The Black Album was a great idea for Metallica. And, you know, I'm going to play that card, and I know this is kind of annoying, but, I mean, the sales, I mean, forget about it. I mean, you know, Justice for All, Master of Puppets, Rain of Lightning, Kill 'Em All. It's like you take Master and Justice, what they have sold now, and it doesn't equal to what the Black Album did. But when you look at the stuff afterwards, over time, the albums afterwards didn't sell as well as those initial four. But here's the thing. The first four albums, they had all pretty much gone gold. And I think, you know, Injustice was like maybe like two times over platinum before Black Album came out. But then, like, those records sell massively after the Black Album comes out because of all the new fans. That's right. Just the way it is.
Right.
I mean, it's cool that they had this awesome core fan base to where they could not have one song played on any radio station or on MTV, blah, 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 and still go gold. That's awesome. And that's what that original thrash era is all about. Word of mouth, tape trading, and all that good stuff. But I can't sit here and say that the Black Album was a bad idea because, I mean, it sold 16 million records at this point. It's the highest charting metal album of all time. And there's not even any metal acts, any bands that you could even argue that are metal that are even on the RIAA's like top 100 selling albums of all time. I mean, the closest you're going to get is like Quiet Riot, Guns N' Roses, you know, and your Led Zeppelins and AC/DC's. But there's no metal representation for like album sales except for Metallica, and that's because of the Black Album.
Well, I think a point I made was that I think that Metallica were poised to be huge almost no matter what they did, and I don't think they had to alter their sound so drastically in order to achieve what they achieved. I definitely agree that they should not have continued in the direction they were going on and Justice for All.
Yeah, but for sure. Y'all made that point already. The songs are too long.
Yeah.
The best songs on there are the shorter songs. I mean, even one is shorter by comparison. Harvester of Sorrow is great, you know, stuff like that. And not that there's anything wrong with some of the longer songs, but yeah, they just plod along to a point, you know, and I think the Black Album is just as much, honestly, for the band at that point. I believe that hype that they said that we were just sick of playing 10-minute songs live. I would understand that. The thing about the execution and whatever their mindset was going into the Black Album, whatever it was, it worked. I mean, and I'm not just going to sit here and say, because a lot of people bought the record, it makes it a great record. I'm not going to sit here and say that. It sounds like I said that from the onset, but I'm getting to a few points here. But it, like... To your point, BJ, I'm backpedaling a little bit here, but I'm not saying that Metallica wouldn't have stayed a big act, but I think they definitely had to curb their style in order to cross over, and that's just, I mean, that is the way it is. I mean, that they went from selling to my friends and me to selling to every other person in the school I went to, and whether they bought an older Metallica album or whether they bought the next Metallica album after that is almost, it's there's no argument there. They bought the Black Album, and the sales show that too. I mean, there was a lot of drop off for Load, but and an even more drop off on Reload, thankfully. Yeah. But like, you could go to anybody's house, and still to this day, if they have CDs still in their collection, they're gonna have the top albums. You know, on that it reads like the RIAA list. They're gonna have Rumors. They're gonna have the first Boston album. They're going to have Billy Joel's Greatest Hits Volume 1 and 2, and they're going to have the Black Album in there. Whether they're a metal fan or not, they sold to non-metal fans. And I think that's where a lot of the venom comes from metal fans in general. And that's not even based on how good the songs are. That's just anger because it's not their band anymore.
They
belong to the world after that. And
I don't have any of that. I don't know. Dave obviously had some of that because he was there from the beginning and they were his favorite band of all time, you know?
Yeah, I understand that. I understand that thing too. I get it. But like, those people go away and then the band goes on, and what they decide to do after it, That's the biggest point I would make. If I'm going to bash Metallica, I'm going to talk about the stuff they did after this.
Well, yeah, that stuff is way worse. But, well, there's a couple of big arguments we made. One thing that I said way too much another thing I noticed when I listened back to myself is that I repeat myself way too much. But so I kept talking about how the songs felt unfinished or incomplete, and they didn't seem to put a lot of effort into it. I mean, like you were saying about Master of Puppets, you know, went gold with no radio, no promotion, just completely outside the mainstream, underground success story. And so Metallica had this huge, huge artistic credibility and respect, and they just seemed to have to just flush it all down the toilet on this record. To me, they took all the artistic credibility they had and wiped their ass with it. And that's one of the things to me that's so bothersome about the album, is did they have to take it that far?
I mean, that's, you know, that the songs that are on there, like, you know, it's funny. I thought I was going to be the one that had the controversial saying, I think Unforgiven and Nothing Else Matters were a lot more fleshed out than anything on the record, but you already said it. But those songs are the reason why, you know, songs like that, especially Inner Sandman, to a point, Inner Sandman will get you the first couple of million, you know, because One did that. And I'm not trying to say Inner Sandman's as good or better than One, because it's not. But that's going to get your sales going, because the momentum going into this album was huge. I mean, the buildup was what, two, 3 years, you know? Yeah. And it took them like a year and a half to record it or whatever. And, or, you know, from demo to finish. And, you know, stuff like Nothing Else Matters and Unforgiven is going to get played on the radio. And not, you know, more so than even Inner Sandman, because it's going to get on like, you know, the pop stations. I heard Nothing Else Matters on pop stations.
Yeah.
When the record was out. You know, I heard all of the songs on rock radio stations, but I heard Nothing Else Matters and Unforgiven on the pop stations. And that's why.
We were probably surprised that the one thing that me and Dave didn't begrudge them was the ballads. You know, it's not about the ballads, where probably a lot of people would come at it as that would be their first complaint.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, and but yeah, some of the songs on there are pretty goofy. I'm not gonna, you know, I like the album. I could say that I would defend about half of this record, and then probably defend it pretty well, in my opinion. But yeah, the goofy stuff's really goofy. It's a band that is writing shorter songs, and their arrangements are not as crazy anymore, and they kind of don't know what to do, and that it does reek of that quite a bit. I'm not gonna say that it doesn't.
Okay. Well, you know, I thought of one way to illustrate the lack of melody on this record. I was thinking about it, and picture the guitar solo in Smells Like Teen Spirit, or, you know, the third Weezer album, the Green album.
Yeah.
Every guitar solo on that record is the vocal melody of the song, right? Now, yeah. So picture the songs on the Black album if the guitar solo was the vocal melody. Like, picture Holier Than Thou or The Struggle Within. If they played the guitar solo as the vocal melody, it would be a ludicrous joke. They'd be playing like two notes, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's a very good point. I like melodic guitar solo, but, you know, yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's just... So I'm coming at it from that kind of a perspective, where what I look for more than anything is the melody. And that's just so lacking on this record, just drastically so, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, there's nothing catchy about most of the heavy songs on here. And, you know, I listened to the album again a few days ago just because I knew I was coming on here. So I did the same thing that you guys did. And I guess it's just one of those things also where the overplayed aspect of it kind of got to me. Even still, I haven't listened to this album top to bottom, you know, probably since I was in high school. And, you know, it's the stuff that I haven't heard 1,000 times, you know, that I liked better, like My Friend of Misery and The God That Failed. But I remember when I was in junior high and I really liked The Wolf of Man, The Struggle Within. I listened to those and I was right today and I was just like, oh, and there's nothing for me there. Like, I listened to, you know, some bad stuff, you know, you go back and listen to it like, oh man, what was I thinking? And those were instances of that. There's some good material on the Black album, and it's stuff like Sad But True and My Friend of Misery, in my opinion. And I you hate Wherever I May Roam. I actually kind of like the song. I would much rather hear Wherever I May Roam pop up on Sirius than like Inner Sandman or, you know, something like that. But Inner Sandman's so overplayed anyway. I can imagine working at a guitar center. You got to hear that song every fucking day.
Yeah, well, you know, I think Wherever I May Roam is one of those songs that once you hear it too many times, you hate it. Or for me, it's, yeah. And that song was way overplayed. I mean, I used to watch Headbangers Ball every week, and probably just that alone meant I saw that song 100 times.
Yeah, that was a pee break when it was having its run, for sure, for me. Like, pee break, go to the fridge. Even live, you'd love this. I was at the taping of Cunning Stunts.
Yeah.
They did it in Fort Worth, Texas. I was at night two of two. And they come out on stage before they start the show, which is weird because you figure the lights go out, the band comes out. The Mystique is like ruined. Lars and the guys come out on stage going, hey, we effed up our video last night. So there's going to be five different points in the show where we play the same song twice in a row. So
and one of those songs
was Wherever I May Roam.
Oh, no.
And it was always, it was stuff like that and Hero of the Day and... Yeah. Like, it's nothing you'd want to hear twice right. in a row. So if you had to go to the bathroom a lot during that show, then you were set. But I mean, great, it was a great show overall. Don't get me wrong, but that was just the weirdest gig because of that reason. So you would have hated being there because you would have had to hear that song twice.
Well, I think me and Dave pretty much both agreed that the real killer of this record, even though the songs aren't there, the real killer was the way James changed the way he sings. And I found that word paragoge, which is actually a term means the addition of a sound to the end of a word, which he does on almost every, like the last word of every line on a lot of these songs. And that's probably just from person to person, whether or not that would annoy them. It annoys the shit out of me.
Yeah. And you opened it up a lot more, and I knew it was there, but to a degree, I never realized how much it was there until you pointed it out. So, and it's hard to unhear a lot of it. And
sorry,
when you play playing the isolated vocals, really just puts it over the top. But I going back to the production and everything you were talking about at the first half, I will defend Bob Rock to a point. I don't think he was like a bad choice to be the producer on this album. I really don't. They were looking for the sound. Apparently the lyrics and the songs were up to Metallica. They hired Bob Rock for the sound specifically, and that's it.
Right. I mean, but a better producer would have also pushed for better songs, I think.
You know, maybe they should have brought in some of their old guys. What was that guy, Flamin Rasmussen, who I've never seen still to this day. I'm convinced that that's a fake name still.
It could be.
Has anybody seen a picture of this guy? Like, seriously, like, he's got to be one of the personas of like somebody we know. I don't know, maybe that's just me or a comedy bit, but yeah, maybe they could have kept him on board as like a, you know, like a lyric guru guy. You know, I mean, Aerosmith did that forever, you know, bands like that. But Bob Rock gave them the sound they needed, you know, because especially after Justice, I am not a fan of the Justice production. I know I'm not alone in that, so this isn't a groundbreaking statement or anything. And it's nice that this was finally the recording debut of Jason Newsted and everything. So I like the overall sound that Metallica got on this album. I think definitely, I think more so than the lyrics is the reason why this album did so well and sold so well, because it had a heavy mix and a heavy sound to it. And I wasn't looking for lyrical brilliance at this point either. Some people still don't.
But really, how the record sounds doesn't matter at all if the songs aren't there, you know?
I think some people would disagree with that. I know people that would disagree with that.
Well, if someone's going to listen to a bad song just because it's produced well, that doesn't make sense to me. But
I understand that. And to me, it's... there needs to be a balance here. You know, we like, our favorite bands are pretty much the same band, so we understand each other. And there are some people, and I've met a ton of people that are massive music fans that have massive music libraries that claim they give no F about lyrics. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, we talked a lot about how bad the lyrics were. How can Kiss be one of a person's favorite bands if they care about lyrics?
Yeah, so, that's the thing. Like,
yeah, and lyrics
honestly,
are...
Honestly, man, look at Master of Puppets. I mean, seriously, like, I love Master of Puppets. But if you want to nitpick lyrics, you could nitpick a decent amount of stuff out of that album, too.
Yeah, that's true. It's like, if the song is good, if the melody is good, then the lyrics don't really matter, or else they're just funny, but you enjoy it as part of the song. But if the song is bad... and it also has really bad lyrics, then I guess that's a different story.
That was a good point. You said you went looking, somebody, you or Dave said that went looking for something else when the music wasn't doing it for them, and they couldn't find it in the lyrics, and that's the place you're supposed to go to when the music's not doing it for you.
Right, yeah, that's and, Dave and said that, I think, yeah.
And I get that. It failed on both ends when you went looking for it. You know, that's just one of those things. I think, like I said, I think Sonic, people take a lot of Sonics for granted, and I think that plays a big part in the Black Album's appeal. I really do. I mean... And honestly, the rest of it's all just imaging and marketing, you know, how much they get played on MTV, how much they get played on the radio, and that's the thing. 60 million people, once again, bought this album over time. I think initially it was probably about half that. I think after the run it was like 7-8 mil. They tour for 2.5 years on this thing. But then like another 8 million people bought it after its run, after right. all, after everything, after Napster, after Load and Reload and Send Anger. 8 million more people bought this. It's the biggest selling album in SoundScan history. And I think, honestly, a lot of it is just because of just the mental aspect of this is the record. It almost doesn't matter now at the end of the day how good it is. I know that's sad, but true. You nailed it. That should have been the album title. And I was going to make that joke, too. I was like, VJ's going to say it. I know he is. I know he is. That's the angle I really wanted to come from. I don't think it's as bad as you guys say it is. I get it, but you know, I think it's one of those things where it's, you know, it's just easy to hate.
Yeah, I don't hate it for any other reason. Well, I wouldn't even say I hate it, but
you wouldn't say you hate it. You guys
no,
are pretty harsh
I don't think
it.
I care that much about it. I think my opinion is they were lazy with the record, which sounds weird since they spent so much time recording it and all that BS. But
yeah.
I don't think they put the work in at all on the songs, probably because they knew, like you were talking about the hype. I remember the hype. This record was a big record before anybody heard a note, you know?
Exactly. Exactly.
So, and they probably pretty much knew that.
Yeah.
And,
it already had
decided, they decided because of that, it needed to sound good, but yeah. I think they were lazy about the songwriting. I mean, that's really what I think in the end.
Yeah. Yeah. In the end, I think this is the perspective I have on the Black Album. This is why I can't. It's almost for to me, I do this with a few things, especially the bigger albums. There's some principle about it that I think was completely positive. I think it was really good for heavy metal, honestly. I think it's one of those things where you get your foot in the door and you get those kids from, and I'll just pick out a random state, Kansas, that aren't exposed to it as much. And it's really nice to go back and look at the overall sales of all the Metallica studio albums, because even though the older albums have had a longer time to be around, they really do trounce the sales of everything that came after it. You know, right yeah. in the middle, you got the Black Album with 16 million and like Justice 9, Ridemaster 6 apiece, Kill 'Em All 3 million. And then like Load was 5 million. That's a big drop off. Reload 4 million, Send Anger 2 million, Death Magnetic 2 million. I think that Death Magnetic gets a bad rap, but that's a whole other show. But, I mean, it made a metal band international superstars. They can tour anywhere where there's electricity because everybody wants to see them to this day. And I think it helped. I think it helped a lot of metal bands. It got a lot of metal bands signed. That's a good thing.
You know, yeah, but it was pretty late in the game. I mean, we talked on the Pearl Jam episode about how the August and September, I think it was, of 91 when... Those were the months that 10 and Nevermind came out. This was the number one record in the country. So,
yeah.
I mean, you know, metal was on its way out already. The writing was on the wall pretty much.
Yeah, but it got a lot of those bands that were just, you know, going gold or, you know, selling like 300,000 units that were already on majors, you know, like the rest of the big four, you know, it got them better deals. Most of them, I think, like especially the bigger names and stuff like that. I don't know. I just think it was better for the overall awareness of heavy metal on a international basis. And I think, you know, because heavy metal was still, I don't want to say in its infancy, it had been around for over 10 years as an actual, you know, genre. So I think it kind of I don't want to discuss the roots of metal too much, but let's say to start with around like Judas Priest, you know, pure metal, you know. So like mid to late 70s, and we're up to 1991 now. And like metal was one of those like, you know, new genres in the 70s, like punk and disco and stuff like that. I think it became the biggest of all of those new genres And a band like Metallica really made it way bigger. And I think Metallica's been great for heavy metal. Whether you like some of the stuff or not, that's the principle that I like about when something like the Black Album happens. Black Album's never going to happen again. No one's ever going to sell 16 million records ever again. That's just, you know, because people don't buy records anymore. They steal them. So
right.
I think it's just kind of neat that we lived in a lifetime where something like that happened.
But then you could take everything you're saying and you could say, well, what a missed opportunity, because they could have put out a better quality, more artistically worthwhile record, and it would have still been in the same, filled the same slot there, and probably maybe not as successful, maybe even as successful. That's the thing we'll never know, is if they had, you know, if they had gone back to like the Master of Puppets type stuff or Ride the Lightning.
I think they should have followed up the Black Album with something that wasn't Load. And
yeah,
that's not, obviously that's not right. What they wanted to do, but I think they needed to do an album like this. It'd have been neat if they'd have kind of done maybe like a Jekyll and Hyde thing, you know, like first half is heavy stuff and the second half we're going to experiment. Like it almost could have been like a concept thing. And then they could have actually just gauged the reaction, you know, to see, okay, well, where do we go from here? So I know artists don't want to do stuff like that. They don't want to be told what to do, you know, and they had to hear a lot about, well, it's not as heavy. You know, they obviously did not want to be a thrash band anymore. That's for sure. You know, but I think what they did afterwards was more telling than what they did on the Black Album, you know, because it's weird. I listened to that album again. I couldn't believe that I didn't like it. I didn't like it as much as I thought I was going to. This time around, I really mean that.
Did we ruin it for you?
No. Like I said, I don't give in to peer pressure. I love listening to opinions about this stuff. And whether I agree with it or not, that's what I like about shows like yours, BJ. But yeah, like, I guess I care more about, like, I've always been a guy that's like, you know, if a band, I don't care how heavy your band is. I want something that grabs me. I want a hook too, you know. That's why I always point to bands like Maiden and Priest, who can be very heavy or very mellow. They've got this thing where it doesn't matter. They write good songs, you know. Black Album kind of falls flat in that instance, but the other side of that coin, people will tell you, well, they're hit singles, so it doesn't matter. Nothing else matters, BJ.
Yeah.
Well, can we, sorry, the Don't Tread on Me thing. Whether this is the actual original reference or not, that little riff at the beginning, that's from West Side Story. So
really,
America,
it's a reference to America. Okay,
yeah, exactly. Okay. And also, Megadeth did that, and they added more to it when they did those horrible remixes. But it's at the beginning of, what's the first song on So Far, So Good, So What? It's on there, too. So, yeah. Into the Lungs of Hell. That's the song.
Okay.
We'll be right back.
Yeah, Dave and I were very down on Bob Rock, but I have to say...
I like Bob Rock as a producer, man. Freaking Motley Crue 94. That might be one of the best mixes like I've ever... You don't like that record?
No.
I think that's one of the best... Not only is it one of the best sounding albums... Yeah, some of the lyrics aren't as great as some of the fans make it out to be, but I love the whole overall aspect of that album. I love the feel about it. They're playing amazing, and I think it's got one of the best mixes. Definitely one of the best drum sets you'll ever hear on any rock album.
Well, Bob Rock produced a lot of early Canadian punk bands, and he was in a band called the Paolas that I like a lot. I have all the records, and then him and the singer from the Paolas had an album called Rock and Hide, which I like a lot. So I like stuff that Bob Rock did.
Yeah.
I just think, you know, one of the reasons this album sucks so much is because he shit the bed on it, and he maybe could have steered them in a better direction, or... I don't know. I mean, if the songs aren't there, there's not a whole lot Bob Rock can do. But I think part of a producer's job is to help with arrangements and just as a creative ear to try to, you know, give advice and say, well, that, you know, struggle within. There's no melody there. This song needs something else. This is just this riff you're using for the whole song is just the intro. You know, you got to write the rest of the song, James.
I feel like maybe maybe a couple of these songs were written on the Justice tour, possibly, maybe the germ of some of it, like a Wherever I May Roam or something like that. But I feel like maybe they just had a big sign on the top of the studio while you're just sitting there in the studio scratching on a notepad, and it just says, keep it simple. Like, the riffs can't be too complicated. The lyrics can't be too complicated. I think that was the big thing to do.
As far for in terms of songwriting, all the effort went into Unforgiven and Nothing Else Matters, and then the other songs are just lazy. Yeah. I
feel like they worked pretty hard on Wherever I May Roam and Sad But True, because I feel like those are the most fleshed out of the quote unquote heavy songs on there. You know, they should have stuck with more songs like that, I think. And I always thought that Sad But True could actually lyrically, I don't think it's as bad as people make it out to be. I think Alice Cooper could have done a song like Sad But True. You know, it might have sounded a little different, but I like the Sabbath meets Alice lyrics aspect of the song for sure.
I like Sad But True. It's one of the only songs with a real hook on the chorus and stuff and like a melody. But, you know, like I know I said on the first half, the way James sings it kind of ruins it. But there's something there, but it's also an incredibly simple song. I mean, if you look at the kind of arrangements on earlier Metallica and then you look at Sad But True, it probably was a relief for James Hetfield, not for the whole band, to not have to create and learn and remember all those intricate arrangements. It probably was a relief to have a very simple song. But then maybe they should have changed the name of the band.
But you know, at that point, it's a brand. So,
Couldn't even come up with a name for the album. So, what would they have named the band? The Band.
Yeah,
that was already taken. I'm surprised how much you agree with what we said. But, you know, I think that's a testament to how right we were. I'm just kidding.
No. I mean, I don't think you were all the way right, but you were more right than I thought, honestly. And I'm not just saying that because I love being right. Let me just say that. And I was ready to come and, you know, and like I said, what did it for me was not so much listening to you guys. It was listening to the album again. You know,
if I could carry this microphone into a frat house in 1992, that's what I want. is to hear the frat boy tell me why this album is so great. All right, so that's going to do it for the two-parter on Metallica. I want to thank Fistful of Dave and Joey Haney for joining me. I hope you enjoyed these episodes. Let me know. rockandorrollpodcast.blogspot.com. Send me an email, rockandorrollpodcast@gmail.com. Go click like on the Facebook page, leave an iTunes review, all that good stuff. And now, to play us out.
What does that mean, to play us out? I don't know what that means, to play us out. What does that mean? To end the show?
Yeah.
I'm going to leave you with a song by a band from Milwaukee, actually, called Beatallica. Maybe you've heard of these guys. What they do is they take a Beatles song and a Metallica song, and they mash them up, usually in a pretty humorous way, and the singer does a great James Hetfield impersonation. And in keeping with the theme of this episode, I'm going to leave you with Metallica's song Sandman, which is a mashup of the Beatles song Taxman and obviously Enter Sandman by Metallica. Till next time. Yeah.
be back.
Okay, if I can be devil's advocate here, which is my job to a degree, some people are going to compare you to Metallica in some ways.
What?
How are you going to deal with that? Just because they've stripped down their sound and they've done some slower songs and stuff like that.
I think anybody with half a brain would know that we've been compared to Metallica many, many, many times, and then rightly so. I mean, I was a big formulation in the beginning of that band. It's like saying that they're going to compare Joe Perry to Aerosmith. You know, if he wouldn't have joined back with Aerosmith, the Joe Perry Project did one of the most accurate songs ever, Let the Music Do the Talking. Aerosmith did that. You know, I talked to Lars the other day, and I told him when I listened to his record, I said, you know, I thought that The Unforgiven was the best song on the whole album. And I listened to his whole album, and this was about, the first time I heard it was almost a year ago or something. And he goes, man, that really meant a lot to me, man. You know, and I went, well, you know, I mean, I really don't really care too much for the rest of the album because that song, you know, means so much more than everything else because the chords were innovative and it was really cool. If people try and compare us to a multi-platinum act, that's okay. It's better than comparing us to a barroom band, some of the shit that's around where we live, you know. But I think, you know, if you have something successful and people are comparing you to that, you know, it's kind of a way of flattery, you know, for us to say that we're comparative to some of our predecessors that have achieved a much higher level of status than we have. That's fine. Just spell our name right, whoever you compare us to.